I want to start by reading you an extract from a book that was written and published in the UK in 1977. I think you'll find it important. Quote, "For over a century, doctors have known that if wires are poked into the brain and an electric charge passes through them, there will be different responses from different parts of the brain. A wire poked into one part will cause a leg to move. The same wire poked into another part of the brain will cause an arm to twitch. 50 years ago, we knew that with the aid of electronic stimulation, doctors could induce pleasure, eradicate pain, and recall memories previously lost. With electrodes in position, the patient can be controlled quite effectively from a distance. He can be made to eat, to sleep, or to work. His appetite, heart rate, body temperature, and other factors can also be monitored and controlled." This is still the quote from the book from 1977. "Researchers have shown that gentle cats can be transformed into aggressive beasts if certain parts of their brains are stimulated. In one dramatic experiment, Dr. Delgado of the Yale University School of Medicine in America wired a bull with electrodes and then planted himself in the middle of a bull ring with a cape and a small radio transmitter. The bull charged but was stopped by Dr. Delgado pressing a button on his transmitter. The bull screeched to a halt inches away from Dr. Delgado. Dr. Delgado reported that animals with implanted electrodes in their brains have been made to perform a variety of responses with predictable reliability as if they were electronic toys under human control. Similar experiments had even then been performed with human beings. The patients selected had all proved dangerous and had shown that they had uncontrollable tempers." Close quotes. And that's the end of the quote. I don't have to get permission to read that extract because it was from my second book, which was called Paper Doctors and was published in 1977 by Morris Temple Smith in London.
گرفتم بعد از طریق امواج رادیویی داره با هم مکالمه میگه که دارم شکم به اعصابم خورد.
Sadly, Paper Doctors has been out of print for years, and for the record, I loathed animal experimentation as much then as I do now. I'm delighted that the British government now appears to have accepted that experiments on animals are pointless. Although I wrote all that in the 1970s, Delgado was working in the 1950s and the 1960s, and his work was just the beginning of a very complicated story that is only now coming towards its final chapters. Most people, and in that I include most doctors and most scientists, have never heard of Delgado's experiments and don't realize just how significant they were then and now are. It was Delgado and people like him who started the long, slow journey towards the control of the human body and human mind. There have, of course, always been two essentials for controlling people from a distance. First, you need a way to implant some sort of receiver in the human body. Over the years, the receivers available have got smaller and smaller. Today, people still think of microchips as being little things you can pick up and hold between your fingers, the sort of thing you might find in a mobile phone, for example. But some microchips are now way, way smaller than that. You can get a pile of the things on a fingernail. You could get one in a syringe and through the needle. You could get one in a spray and blow it up your nose. That's small. Not that anyone would want to inject a microchip into themselves, of course, though other people, I suppose, might like to do it for them. The second necessity is for a transmitter. And that's not difficult at all. You need a tall post of some kind, a flagpole or a tall building or a pylon would do. And then you stick your transmitter on the top so that it can send out its messages over a wide area. That bit's easy. Something like a radio transmitter, or I suppose one of those things that sends signals to mobile phones. It would have to be a bit more sophisticated than the old mobile phone signals, of course. So that's all the equipment you need. A little chip in the body of the person you want to control, and a transmitter to send the messages. If you were a mad doctor or a mad anybody else, you wanted to control an individual, it would be a doddle. You just tell them you were going to give them an injection to protect them against, I don't know, the flu or something. And in the syringe, there'd be a little receiver. And then you'd stick a transmitter on the roof of the house across the road from where they lived. And then you could send messages to make them do whatever you wanted them to do. You could make them sad or angry or happy or contented. You could make them run or fight or just spend all day in bed. Remember, that's what Dr. Delgado was doing over half a century ago. It's nothing new. Of course, if you wanted to do the same thing for lots of people, you need a lot of people to help you. Say you were a really bad person and you wanted to control a whole population, for example. You could make people do whatever you wanted them to do. You could make them go shoplifting or commit murder or vote for somebody or commit suicide or anything you wanted them to do. If you wanted a smaller population, you could make everyone stop wanting to have children. It would be terribly easy. Remember, Dr. Delgado was doing this over half a century ago. It's just that his receivers and transmitters were a bit cumbersome. He had to fasten the receiver onto the top of the animal's head or the human's head and then use a transmitter that he held in his hand. If you wanted to do all this, you'd need to be very, very rich to start with, somebody with loads of money and lots of contacts. A billionaire, really, I suppose, and somebody with not too much in the way of morals. And you'd need something to inject into people. I suppose it would have to be a medicine or something. And then you'd need somebody who was good at software to help with all the transmitting and the receiving. And you'd need people with access to lots of tall poles or roofs where you could put the transmitter things. But none of that would be any good unless you had a reason for injecting people. You can't just go around injecting millions of people for no reason. Ideally, you'd need them all to be frightened of something so that they were dead keen to let you inject them. And then you could put your tiny receivers into the stuff that was being injected, go easily through the needle. Or you could squirt it up their noses or whatever you fancied, or put it on anyway. But that would be a tricky thing to organise because you'd ideally need a threat of some kind. You could tell everyone they were going to get the plague or something if they didn't let you give them their wonderful antidote. I suppose that might work. But for that, you'd have to have a big scare about something. And that wouldn't be possible because you'd need some experts to say there was a big scare coming or present when really there wasn't. So they have to make up something or find something and then exaggerate it. Or you could find somebody not very good at what they did, I suppose, and get them to make a forecast that terrified the life out of everyone. And then you'd have to keep people really scared. You could get all the media on your side. You could, I suppose, get people so scared that they were happy to put up with all sorts of rules and restrictions. And you could tell people that if they didn't do what you told them to do, then the scary thing, whatever it was going to get worse than ever. And you'd need some experts and advisors, preferably somebody who had links to the companies making the stuff you were planning to give people. And you could promise them all sorts of things. And you'd probably need some fairly greedy and some compliant politicians too. But it really wouldn't be possible to arrange all that, would it? And anyway, there's another problem, because you'd need to keep people separated so that you could make sure the messages you were transmitting reached the individual receivers. You'd have to have people standing several feet apart all the time, and there's no way you could get people to do that. So it couldn't possibly work, could it? Even if that's what somebody wanted to do. Thank you for watching An Old Man in a Chair. And thank you for all your support and encouragement. Please copy and share the videos on Twitter and Facebook, from which I was never allowed to join. And put them on BitChute or any other platforms. Let's spread the truth. If you'd like to put on a translation, that would be absolutely great. If my videos disappear, then please go to my website to find out where you can see them. The transcripts of all my videos, including the growing number of banned ones, are always on my website. www.vernoncoleman.com. If you do have a bit of a brainstorm and visit mainstream media, put on messages asking others to watch these videos to find the truth. If all the people watching this video help one or two people a week to see the light, then the whole nonsense will be over before you can say nonsense. This channel has not been monetized, I haven't authorized any ads, and there's no sponsorship. If you'd like to see more videos from me, please subscribe to my channel because they're not always easy to find. Although it may feel like it at times, please remember, you're not on your own. More and more people are waking up. I firmly believe that together we will win this fight. And remember, distrust the government, avoid mass media, and fight the lies. Thank you for watching.
We're thankful, though, as dark as this information is, we're thankful that we are able to learn about it and understand it so that, you know, we're not unaware of Satan's devices. We're not going to be caught unawares in order to help protect ourselves. Now, what we're looking at here is an absolutely mind-blowing report that has been put out by La Quinta Columna and someone that works with their team. We could do an entire show just on this report alone, but we just wanted to highlight a few of the things that have been found in the vaccines. The report, by the way, is in the notes. You really should go look at it because it's got amazing graphics and it really, really helps to explain.
So basically they have compiled the structures that they found in all of these samples and were able to determine through research, looking at research papers, what these are. They're talking about nano routers, things that emit MAC addresses via Bluetooth. So that explains why people are showing up with Bluetooth in their codes that they're emitting from their bodies. Nano antennas that amplify the signal, other kinds of antennas that will change electricity from one form, alternating current to direct current. Codecs, basically they're finding chips that are able to perform transformations on data that are coming in and out of the body. Logic gates, again, basic computer components they're finding at the nanoscale. And again, patents that describe how they will hook up human beings to the Internet of Things. This is also what they talked about, La Quinta Columna.
And we've listed those patents here, so you can go look them up. They're routing policies for biological hosts by AT&T, devices and methods for transferring data through a human body, and cryptocurrency system using body activity data. This is the infamous one from Microsoft with the number 666 in it.
And the patent number.
These are the actual patents that are explaining how they're going to hook up human beings to 5G. It's right there. That's the evidence that you need. It's not a conspiracy. This is what they're doing. And now we understand that they needed the COVID vaccines in order to inject everybody with this technology in order to pull this off.
Nosotros hemos sabido descubrir la enfermedad, pero nos las damos con un enfermo que sufre de anosognosia, que se llama, que no sabe que está enfermo. Es decir, la gente no sabe lo que está pasando y tú estás intentando decirles, oiga, ¿qué tal? Pues esto, por eso el hecho de ser médico me pone en muy buena situación para saber lo que le está pasando al mundo, porque yo estoy ocultando al mundo y me estoy dando cuenta de lo que le pasa. Digo, ¿de qué me sirve haber descubierto lo que le pasa al mundo si el mundo no se entera ni se quiere enterar? ¿Os dais cuenta del gravísimo problema que tenemos?
Y encima tienes esa gente poniéndote piedras, metiéndole otra vía de engaño.
Que no he terminado, Ricardo. Es que eres un médico que tienes un enfermo grave, que no quiere escucharte, y que tienes el médico de enfrente que te está haciendo la competencia y que el otro le va a decir que no tiene nada. Tú fíjate en qué situación nos estamos. Imposible, o sea, dices, si eres un médico responsable, dices, este enfermo está perdido. Ahora, adiós, buenos días o buenas noches, adiós señor, va usted a morir. Una palabra. Porque yo le estoy diciendo lo que tiene, estoy intentando salvarle, usted no me está escuchando, no me quiero ir porque sabe que lo que le digo es muy serio y prefiere no oírme y va y busca al médico de enfrente que le dice que está usted perfecto. Lo que pasa es que dentro de unos meses usted se va contento y de la consulta del otro, no de la mía, porque va a ir a buscarle y dentro de unos meses está usted muerto. Y a lo mejor aquí, pues no le digo que le salve, pero a lo mejor hacemos algo y comprende. Fíjate en la situación que estamos.
If you look on the research, what it can do, they can also be used as biosensors. What's a biosensor? It's like a little antenna inside the body. It's microscopic, and it can accumulate data inside your body, like your breathing, respiration, blood pressure, but also It has the potential to know if you're lying, like a polygraph test, electrodermal analysis, your blood alcohol content, your thoughts and emotions, all kinds of things. Those are potentials that the biosensors can do. And so biosensors are wirelessly transmitting information. It's a two-way communication, information out, information in. And anything that's around you that's digital, you are communicating with, not really consciously, but you are. And this is the plan for people by 2030 to be connected to something called the Internet of Everything. And so this is a plan for every human on Earth to be connected around to everything. They're saying that this is a grand idea because this is part of something called Agenda 2030. So if you look at the World Economic Forum, you will see that this is a plan for 2030. Also look at the Codex Alimentarius, Agenda 21, all kinds of different plans like that. They say the same thing. So if you look at the World Economic Forum, they claim that by 2030, we don't own anything, we have no privacy, but we're happy. And they also say that all of your thoughts and your dreams are recorded. And in this description on their webpage, they said that those thoughts and dreams, hopefully they won't go against the narrative or the paradigm at that time, because perhaps you could be in trouble for what you think or dream of.
Everybody else around the world, you need to listen very carefully to this. As a result of the tests that have been carried out at a hospital in Bratislava, Slovakia, their research has revealed that the PCR tests are dangerous and they are leaving hollow tubes inside the human body that contain hydrogel, and that hydrogel is causing blood clots. Every single person, UK and around the world, stop taking the PCR tests now. Take them all to your local police station and show them the evidence from Slovakia. Until that information is proven reliable or not, nobody anywhere in the world should be taking any more PCR tests. Stop taking them. This evidence is damning, it's worrying, and it's causing serious health issues to everybody. And they're citing it is a tool for genocide. All police officers, all police forces in the world, you need to test these PCR test kits and prove if this is true or not true, what has been revealed in Slovakia. To our brothers and sisters in Bratislava, Slovakia, thank you very much for doing this. This potentially could save millions, if not billions, of lives around the world. No more PCR tests. Urgently take everything that you have, PCR tests, in the home, in the hospitals, in your doctor's surgery, in care homes, anywhere there's PCR tests. Do not take them. They are potentially contaminated, according to this very damning and very serious report. I've attached it again to this video. Please make every single police officer, police force aware of this around the world. No more PCR tests till it's proven what Slovakia are saying is true or not true.
This is a follow-up to a previous video I put out. I want to replay the part of that video where they put underneath a Zoom camera, or maybe it's a microscope, the COVID test swab. I'm not sure if this is the PCR swab or the rapid lateral flow swab, but when you look at it under the microscope, it is very concerning. You see these little jaggedy shards coming out. They look like plexiglass shards or something. And they did a very concerning demonstration. They took a chunk of meat and they rubbed it with one of these swabs. It doesn't even look like they rubbed it roughly or anything, just kind of a light rub. In my assessment, what they're doing inside people's noses and their brain membrane is much more rough than this. So the outcome of the experiment is we see when they zoom in on this piece of meat, these shards sticking out of the flesh. Now, just imagine what this is doing when they're shoving this up kids' noses and adults alike. So somebody sent me this very interesting report that I have up on the screen for you here, and I'm going to put it in the link in the description down below. The report is called Analysis of Test Sticks from Surface Testing in the Slavic Republic, Confirmation of Genocide. So they say that the test was performed between November and March November 2020 and March 2021. They mentioned a number of brands here, SD Biosensor, Abbott, and Nadal. They examined these in a hospital laboratory in Slovakia. Now, let me point out, I don't know exactly who's behind this study. It could be an elaborate hoax. I haven't been able to verify the claims made here. Also, I want to stay away from some of the speculation they make in this document. I recommend people go read it with a critical, discerning eye. But the point of this video is to draw attention to the microscopic imaging that they have in this document. So in the intro here, it says, anyone who has at least a standard school microscope and a test microscope can verify the information regarding the test swabs published here. And it also mentions that the swabs were from the ones used in Slovakia and in hospitals. Now, this is a very interesting and concerning conclusion. What they're going to demonstrate in the images is very concerning, in addition to the video that we started with. So in bold here, it says, from this information, it is clear that test sticks are a criminal tool of genocide in the population of Slovakia. This is a worldwide, thoughtful, and carefully prepared event. So let's look at the first images here. So these two images are of nylon hollow fibers at the broken end of test swabs. That's the caption here. Apparently, these are some sort of nylon. I'm not exactly sure how they know that, if that's admitted to by the manufacturers of these swabs. If anybody has any more information about this, please do email me at timtruth@protonmail.com. Now, in these pictures, they're showing the tips of these fibers coming out from the swab. And let me read the caption here. This is their phrasing. Broken-shaped ends. Their task is to disrupt the epithelium, the surface layer of the mucosa. Therefore, also their breakage and subsequent leaching of the fiber content. And they mention the fiber content as being DARPA hydrogel and lithium. They even claim that the threads are patented by DARPA. Now, I can't verify this, and I'm going to be saying that a lot in this video, but I do get the sense that these people know what they're talking about. So we should consider this at least as a theory that needs to be investigated. Now, this is an up-close view of one of these fibers, and the caption reads, longitudinally open fiber with broken end and DARPA hydrogel content balls. Now, that is very concerning if that's the case. I believe they're talking about this opening right here. They're saying that there might be some DARPA hydrogel in there. We've heard a lot about DARPA hydrogel in the past few months, but I am in no way an expert. I don't think many people are. But the more I hear about it, it sounds more and more sinister and something that we need to be concerned about and investigate. And that's what these people are doing here. So this next figure, the caption reads, on the slide after mechanical manipulation, which is identical to the swab nasopharyngeal material that contains crushed nylon fibers, hydrogen, and lithium. The material remains in nasopharynx after spawning. So again, I'm not sure what this all means. I'm just presenting this to the public so that people are aware of this and they can dig into this. And I'm also asking people for any information you may have on this. Send me an email. Now, lithium is very concerning. Why would there be lithium? Now, I'm not sure that there is lithium in the test swabs, but that's what this report claims. And it looks like they have access to some high-tech microscopes to generate this imaging. Lithium, if you don't know, is a compound used to treat schizophrenia and bipolar manic depressive disorder. So it really dulls the emotions of somebody. And it has an impact on people's way of thinking. Remember, we've seen it in the news. They say, we need to add lithium to the water. Scientists say we need to add lithium to the water to reduce suicides and violent crimes. But why do they really want to fill us with lithium? Now, this is very concerning here. I'm not sure exactly what the scale is on these images, but the caption here reads, DARPA hydrogel beads that form the content of hollow nylon fibers. So they're saying that these fibers that we were looking at earlier are hollow and full of DARPA hydrogel beads. And we've seen from other experiments, the one we started this video off with, that these fibers will lodge their way into flesh and break off. Could that be some sort of a drug delivery system or a hydrogel or other technology delivery system? Might that be the design? I can't think of a reason why the design would be so bad unless it's something like that. Like, why wouldn't you just use cotton? Or something that's not going to break off and stab people in the nose? Did they have no quality assurance? Did they do no testing? Or did they do a lot of testing and this was the best iteration of what they were going for? It's a terrifying thought. Okay, now this is where it gets really, really weird. It says, after contact of the DARPA hydrogel with organic fluids, for example, saliva, within a few minutes, the DARPA hydrogel begins to form rectangular crystal structures, which gradually grow in a fractal manner. So it looks like these here are the beginning of the growing. They look like plus signs, but they keep growing in a fractal fashion, which is very interesting. And look how complex it gets at this point. Now, this is very strange. These are right angles. This is just mind-boggling what we're looking at here. We're seeing right angles, and this is apparently growing. So it started with just some plus signs, which is strange enough when they added saliva to the DARPA hydrogels. Now, this is all allegedly. This is all reportedly. So the caption on this picture here says, the result of crystallization after 24 hours. So 24 hours later, after they added, I guess, saliva or some other type of organic fluid, and these things kept growing and growing and growing, 24 hours later, this is what they ended up with. Wow. Okay, the next image says, these DARPA hydrogel crystals create a 3D spatial structure and grow throughout the tissues. 3D spatial structure and grows throughout tissue. I'll just let these pictures speak for themselves. I mean, what are we looking at here? This looks like advanced technology. And this is in the COVID swab that they're sticking up people's nose? Is it true that these shards are sticking into people? Is it true that they're full of little beads that do this when they interact with organic fluids? This is very concerning. So this slide says, DARPA hydrogel crystals grow under the microscope in the direction of the magnetic field. In the human nasopharynx, after swabs grow towards the pineal gland, the pineal gland creates a locally stronger magnetic field than the Earth's external magnetic field. So it claims that the pineal gland creates a locally stronger magnetic field than the Earth's external magnetic field. I don't know if that's true. I did a quick Google search. I did find some articles saying that the pineal gland responds to magnetic fields, but nothing jumped right out and said it produces magnetic fields. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying I don't know that to be true, but that would be interesting, given how these grow in the direction of the magnetic field in this experiment. Okay, now the next image here, what are we looking at? Natural crystallization of saliva without DARPA hydrogel. Crystals do not create 3D spatial models and do not even form rectangular structures and do not grow in a fractal way. So this is interesting, but it does look totally different. You don't see the squares, you don't see the fractals. You just see lines with dashes through them here. But that's very interesting. But back to their tests with the COVID test swabs, what they're calling DARPA hydrogel inside of these nylon fibers. So in this next image, they're showing the DARPA hydrogel crystals. Some very interesting structures seen. So the next image, they're saying that they added saliva of a human who overcame COVID naturally and has antibodies. Such saliva was added to the left side of the structures in figure 17. So this image shows the last image, but they added the saliva with the antibodies. And the caption here says that it almost immediately caused the permanent disintegration of the DARPA hydrogel crystal structures. The next image, they say that they applied ivermectin on the right side of the structures, and this had an even more pronounced effect. I can hardly see on the right side of this image any more of those structures. So they added ivermectin, and they note it resulted in the complete and permanent disappearance of the DARPA hydrogel crystal structures. Now that's very interesting, especially given the war on ivermectin. The WHO and the mainstream media have been attacking that. Now this is very concerning if their conclusions are correct here. This examines the effect of DARPA hydrogel on human blood cells. So first here in this image we have normal live red blood cells. Then they add DARPA hydrogel from inside the test swab fibers, and it resulted in what they call a total massacre of the red blood cells. Look at this. Mayhem. In the next image, it says DARPA hydrogel forms blood clots within a few seconds. These subsequently damage and clog blood vessels. Okay, we've been hearing a lot about blood clots in the media. Many people have been concerned about the vaccines causing blood clots. We've been hearing about AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson and allegations that they're causing blood clots. But nobody that I've heard of is talking about the test swabs potentially causing them, except for this report here. So again, I'm not sure what to make of this, but very, very interesting claims. Let's read through the summary here. After spawning a mixture of nylon fiber fragments, DARPA hydrogel remains on the nasal mucosa under the pituitary and pineal gland along with lithium. So is there lithium involved in these swabs? That's crazy to me. I mean, the DARPA hydrogel takes it to an insane level, but lithium alone is a story. So they're saying, basically, in that first sentence, that the swab goes in, but it's leaving stuff behind. In their assessment, DARPA hydrogel and lithium. They go on to say the mixture immediately reacts with living structures to form crystals that are directionally oriented to the pineal gland, which has its own electromagnetic field. The shape of the crystals determines the type of hydrogel used. I'm not sure what that sentence means exactly. They go on to say the crystals are conductive due to the lithium contained in it. The crystals can receive the signal from the transmitter to the cell and transmit signals from the cell to the transmitter. These are actually nano antennas, and they bolded that. They say lithium is an element that does not occur naturally in humans. It is highly toxic to the pineal gland influence. In low doses, it blocks it, and in higher doses, it can completely destroy it. Aluminum and mercury also have toxic effects on the pineal gland, and they are also used widely in vaccines. The pineal gland produces serotonin, which is a hormone of happiness, and controls human biorhythms. It is crucial for higher brain activity, creativity, foresight, sixth sense, etc., and for social interactions of man. And then it goes into some very interesting stuff, but outside of the scope of this video. Check out the link in the description to the full report if you want to check that out. This is pretty crazy stuff about like a remote control DARPA beetle. They're worried that this technology could turn people into controllable biorobots. They're also concerned whether the vaccine contains DARPA hydrogel, lithium, etc. So I wanted to share these images with everybody. I find this to be very concerning. I find that test where they swab the piece of meat and then they look at it up close and there's little shards sticking into the flesh, in combination with this report that we just covered of little microbeads which are causing strange crystallization of saliva, this is all very, very concerning to me. And I wanted to put this out for everybody's information. Again, I'm not making any claims here. I haven't run these experiments myself. This came across my desk and I thought you might want to hear this. Feel free to share this video wherever. Do your own research. And if you find anything, please send me an email, timtruth@protonmail.com. If you know who these are, send me an email. And I hope everybody has a great day. Keep digging, folks, and keep me in the loop. Have a great day.
Tengo una pregunta para José Luis. Digamos que me vacuné, ¿no? Pongamos este ejemplo. Que me vacuné y digo, bueno, a ver, yo quisiera chequear cómo estoy, si tengo o no tengo capaz la consecuencia de haber sido inyectado con grafeno o con lo que sea. A ver, a nivel de análisis de sangre, ¿qué cosas debería pedir que me hagan en un hemograma? ¿Cómo puedo sacar la ficha de cómo estoy? ¿Qué me aconsejas a nivel de, me imagino, análisis de sangre? Se me ocurre por ese lado.
Yo, como se hace en medicina, lo primero que se hace es la historia clínica. Se le pregunta a la gente cómo se encuentra, cómo está, la anamnesis, luego se les explora, no tienen ningún tipo de lesión cutánea que haga pensar en un problema de coagulación. En fin, lo examinas, ves si hay alguna cosa que llame la atención, se encuentra bien. Luego yo haría, además del examen habitual, pues añadiría el examen de los puntos de inoculación y de la zona alta del tórax y de la espalda y de la cabeza para ver si hay fenómenos magnéticos. Si no los hay, a lo mejor no ha recibido el material, era placebo. También hay que tener en cuenta el tiempo de la inoculación, porque con el tiempo eso puede desaparecer. Es decir, se examina, se busca algún tipo de signo magnético y luego ya si quiere, pues añaden los exámenes complementarios, que en este caso, si no hay ninguna sospecha de nada, se puede investigar en sangre la coagulación. El hemograma, que se llama, todo lo que son glóbulos rojos, blancos y plaquetas, y, por ejemplo, los factores de coagulación que se piden normalmente, el tiempo de protrombina, el fibrinógeno, el tiempo de cefalina activada y, además, el dímero D.
Hemos visto muchos videos sobre dímero D. ¿Nos da una explicadita ahí media resumida de cómo funciona eso?
No es el único factor que se perturba con todo esto. Las plaquetas también pueden venir alteradas. Es decir, te puedes hacer una idea, pero en realidad es que no es todo esto. Es que este elemento que se introduce en sangre es modulable. O sea, desde fuera, en función de la proximidad a campos electromagnéticos externos, eso tiene una toxicidad. Puede ser que estés perfectamente bien, que no tienes apenas o tienes muy poco dímero D, por ejemplo, y un día te plantas a tomar un helado delante de una antena. Adiós, se te va a empezar a perturbar todo. O sea, eso, allí no hay un continuo. Es decir, esto no es un tóxico normal, que coges, lo inyectas y ya está. ¿Te hace daño o no te lo hace? No, es que te lo meten y puedes vivir perfectamente hasta que un día te acercas a una antena, por ejemplo. O las abren ellos con las frecuencias que ellos supongan, que sabemos que eso tienen que hacerlo de alguna manera porque ellos crean olas y las crean con eso. Si no, no la hubieran metido en la vacuna de la gripe en las dos estaciones, en las dos últimas temporadas. Es decir, eso es modulable desde fuera. Con lo cual, puedes estar hoy bien y mañana mal, dependiendo de dónde estés, a qué tipo de señales te estés exponiendo. Se pueden hacer exámenes, pero yo no me quedaría tranquilo hasta que no pasara por lo menos medio año, porque sabemos que tienen pensado vacunar cada 5 o 6 meses. Y eso quiere decir que el cuerpo se debe de deshacer de eso en un año totalmente. Luego ellos, antes de que se deshaga del material, dan la dosis para que haya siempre un nivel. Así es que sabemos que eso con el tiempo desaparece, pero el tiempo que está ahí corre unos riesgos. En función, aunque te encuentres bien, ¿eh?, en función de probablemente los lugares donde estés, donde vivas, etcétera.
Doctor, aprovecharte. Propuestas para los que tengan el bicho, venga de donde venga.
Sí, pues nosotros lo que hemos descubierto es que desde febrero del 2020 hasta septiembre de 2020 se estaba tratando la COVID-19, aparte de con ivermectina, la hidroxicloroquina, sobre todo con N-acetilcisteína y también con glutatión directamente. ¿Por qué? Ahora entendemos perfectamente por qué funcionaba. Y fíjate cómo funcionaba. Funcionaba inhibiendo o reduciendo la tormenta de citoquinas, inhibiendo el síndrome postinflamatorio, es decir, reduciéndolo, eliminando el fenómeno trombótico y coagulante. Cuando tú tienes un fármaco o medicamento o suplemento, porque es un suplemento alimenticio, que actúa sobre toda la sintomatología y cuadro clínico de la enfermedad, es precisamente porque actúa sobre el agente etiológico causante de la misma. Lo que nosotros hemos descubierto es que el glutatión reduce y oxida, es decir, elimina el óxido de grafeno. Por eso estamos convencidos de que precisamente el óxido de grafeno era el causante de la enfermedad de la COVID-19, que se introdujo silenciosa y sigilosamente en la campaña antigripal 2019 a nivel global. Y provocaron, con la posterior excitación electromagnética que todos saben, con el famoso encendido, el ensayo tecnológico, la enfermedad de moda. Recuerden todos que todo esto ocurrió en Wuhan. Y en Wuhan ni había un pangolín, ni había una sopa con un murciélago, ni había una chinita que nos dijo en el programa de Iker Jiménez, o Freaker Jiménez como lo conocen ya, que se escapó de un laboratorio para aquellos más rebuscados. Era todo mucho más fácil. En finales de noviembre de 2019 se dieron los primeros casos de la verdadera COVID-19, donde los chinos aparecían con disnea y caían. Caían de golpe en medio de la calle. Una persona que está enferma no está en la calle, está en su casa en cama. Pero esto es tan letal, y cuando digo esto me refiero a la radiación, es tan letal, si han sido marcados previamente con la vacuna antigripal, probablemente introduciendo el óxido de grafeno, que en cuestión de minutos la persona baja los niveles de saturación y cae. ¿Por qué? Porque nosotros tenemos en el organismo unas reservas naturales de glutatión. Y ahora vamos a hacer algunas especificaciones. Cuando el glutatión está alto no tenemos ningún problema, pero cuando el óxido de grafeno excede en la balanza al glutatión, se provoca el colapso del sistema inmunológico y la tormenta de citoquinas. ¿Y cómo excede el óxido de grafeno? Por excitación electrónica. Es decir, lo bombardean, lo oxidan más rápidamente y hay en el organismo el equilibrio entre oxidantes y antioxidantes mucho más alto para el primero. Por lo tanto, se desencadena la enfermedad rápidamente, a golpe de botoncito. Por eso ellos saben cuando viene una ola, la segunda, la tercera, por donde va a ir la variante Delta, la lambda. La variante Delta no es nada más que el encendido del botón próximo. Y eso nos tenemos que cuidar. Entonces, fíjense ustedes que los niveles de glutatión están bajos precisamente a partir de los 65 años, caen en picado, ¿eh? Las reservas de glutatión. ¿Y a dónde afecta la COVID-19? A los mayores, sobre todo, ¿verdad? Los niveles de glutatión en las personas infantes, en los niños, están muy altos. Y la COVID-19 prácticamente no afecta a la población infantil. Los niveles de glutatión están extremadamente bajos en las personas con obesidad. Y sin embargo, la población obesa es de las más castigadas de la COVID-19. Los niveles de glutatión están muy altos en aquellas personas que practican deporte de forma intensa. Y sin embargo, apenas ocupa población diana castigada por la COVID-19 los deportistas. Todo hace pensar que la N-acetilcisteína funcionaba porque reducía, como es un precursor del glutatión de forma endógena, reducía directamente el óxido de grafeno. Entonces tenemos ahí un arma. Es el famoso mucolítico de toda la vida con el que se ha tratado a personas. Hemos visto ensayos clínicos con cientos de pacientes que estaban en UCI con respirador, intubados, prácticamente al borde de la muerte, con neumonías bilaterales provocadas por la diseminación del óxido de grafeno y la posterior radiación. Coge en las placas pues esa mancha difusa simétrica, cosa que no pasaría con un agente biológico, que sería más bien asimétrica, como por ejemplo la infección de neumococos, ¿no? Pues suele aparecer una mancha difusa pues en una parte de un pulmón, pero no en otra, no en las dos de forma simétrica. Entonces, cuando se ha tratado con glutatión vía intravenosa directa, o con, incluso de forma oral también, o con la N-acetilcisteína de 600 miligramos o dosis más alta, las personas en cuestión de horas empezaban a recuperar la saturación de oxígeno, porque claro, elevan los niveles de glutatión para hacer frente al tóxico que se ha introducido o que se ha excitado electrónicamente hablando. ¿Vale? Para aquí, lo que puedo decir, por supuesto, consulten, aunque sea un suplemento alimenticio, consulten con su médico de cabecera por la prescripción médica, que no la tiene, pero la que le puedan dar ellos por si usted tiene algún tipo de variable interna intrínseca que pueda ser incompatible el consumo con glutatión, ¿vale? Glutatión o con la L-acetilcisteína. Lo consultan siempre con el médico. Pero en principio hagan aprovisionamiento de él, es decir, tengan en su casa directamente N-acetilcisteína y glutatión. Fíjate qué curioso, Carlos, que el 17 de junio la Organización Mundial de la Salud, a través de la FDA, quería prohibir la comercialización de la N-acetilcisteína cuando lleva 57 años en el mercado. Y nos preguntamos que qué raro, ¿por qué? Todo lo que nos han dicho que hacía perder eficacia en la vacuna, como por ejemplo el etanol, que no bebiera ni una gota de alcohol, pensamos que podía ser porque el etanol barría la cápsula lipídica donde supuestamente iba a ir el ARN mensajero y supuestamente a lo mejor lo que va es el óxido de grafeno encapsulado para que llegue a nivel neuronal y no precisamente a cambiar y alterar el ADN como pensábamos inicialmente. Si barremos con el etanol, con alcohol etílico, la cápsula, por eso se nos decía que no consumiéramos ni una gota de alcohol durante el tratamiento de la vacuna. Dejamos el óxido de grafeno expuesto para que lo ataque directamente los neutrófilos y del cuerpo. Es posible que esa haya sido la reacción trombótica que hayan tenido mucha gente y quizás así después hayan podido salvar su vida. No sea ningún tipo de respuesta inmunológica como la gente se piensa. Y cuando nos dijeron que no tomemos el sol, que no tomemos excesivamente el sol porque también resta la eficacia de la vacuna. Bueno, pues el sol es la vitamina D. La vitamina D está relacionada igualmente con el glutatión. Cuando el glutatión está bajo, la vitamina D está baja. Por eso los pacientes COVID presentan bajos niveles de vitamina D. Entonces, estimular al cuerpo a segregar glutatión o de forma externa, complementaria, introducir suplementación con glutatión, va a salvar la vida, seguramente. Hay ensayos clínicos al respecto. También se nos dijo que no comiéramos marisco. Y que las almejas tenían, le hicieron un PCR a las almejas y tenían el famoso coronavirus, la secuenciación del SARS-CoV-2, esa que es virtual y que existe solo dentro de un algoritmo informático en un ordenador. Y sabemos igualmente que el marisco eleva también los niveles de glutatión. Por lo tanto, todo lo que nos dicen, prácticamente hay que hacer lo contrario. También nos dijeron que no había que hacer autopsias y precisamente por saltarse las autopsias del doctor Pascual Baco en Italia, después se salvaron infinidad de vidas porque se vieron que esto era un trombo y era un problema cardiovascular. Entonces, evidentemente, ya no nos podemos fiar de ninguna de esas instituciones y eso fue una de las razones por las que hicimos el análisis del vial. Es como si estamos en casa y una persona que nos ha robado 20 veces, ha intentado matarnos, llama a la puerta y nos acerca un vaso y nos dice, esto es una Coca-Cola muy rica, te la tienes que tomar porque además te va a subir el ánimo y te va a poner genial. Y yo lo primero que pienso, oiga, mire usted, esto es lo más probable es que sea cicuta, porque ya me ha engañado 9 o 10 veces, yo voy a analizar el contenido de lo que usted me propone, ¿verdad? Y eso es lo que ha hecho la quinta columna.
So why would you be taking an inoculation for something that doesn't even exist? Yes. And that when you're thinking about those flu symptoms, that you've been infected by some sort of influenza virus, think about how you've been living your life, what you've been eating, what you've been drinking, what you've been breathing, and think about how you've lived it. And when you can take them personal responsibility for your lifestyle choices, rather than blame it on something that doesn't even exist, and then even buy into the fact that I'm going to inoculate against something that doesn't exist, literally poisoning my body, and then trying to survive it and praying to God that I'm not injured by it. Well, folks, for those who have done this, if they don't start doing something, it wasn't me that said this, it was Yerdon, who was with Pfizer for 30 years. Okay?
Michael Yerdon.
The prognosis is 2 years.
Wow. 2 years. That's it.
I didn't say that. I'm just quoting him. And he worked at Pfizer. He was in their infectious disease for creating vaccinations.
The specific properties of graphene, such as a high electrical conductivity, high thermal conductivity, and excellent mechanical properties have made graphene not only a gelator to self-assemble into graphene-based hydrogels, which the acronym for that is GBH, with an extraordinary electromechanical performance, but also as a filler to blend with small molecules and macromolecules for the preparation of multifunctional graphene-based hydrogels. People allowing hydrogel into their bodies are hybridizing their body, basically shape-shifting it into a biological robot. The hydrogel filler acts as a glue within your body to network with artificial intelligence as a computer interface, and you are being reduced to a node in the Internet of Things.